Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to RADCOM's Limited Third Quarter 2016 Results Conference Call. All participants that are present in listen-only mode. Following management's formal presentation, instructions will be given for the question-and-answer session. For operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded November 1st, 2016. On the call today is Yaron Ravkaie, RADCOM CEO, and Ran Vered, RADCOM CFO. By now, we assume you have seen the earnings press release, which was issued earlier today. It is available on all the major financial news feeds. Please note that the management has prepared a presentation for your reference that will be used during the call. If you have not downloaded it yet, you may do so through a link on the investor section of RADCOM's website at www.radcom/investorrelations. If you have any trouble, please send Mark Rolston an email at markr@radcom.com, and he will send it to you right away. Before we begin, I'd like to review the safe harbor provision. Forward-looking statement in the conference call involve a number of risks and uncertainties, include but not limited to product demand, pricing, market acceptance, changing economic conditions, product technology development, the effect of the company's accounting policies, and other risk factors detailed in the company's SEC filings. The company does not undertake to update forward-looking statements. The full safe harbor provisions are set forth in the presentation. In this conference call, management will be referring to certain non-GAAP financial measures, which are provided to enhance the user's overall understanding of the company's financial performance. By excluding non-cash charges, non-GAAP results provide information that is useful in assessing RADCOM's core operating performance and in evaluating and comparing our results of operations on a consistent basis from period to period. The presentation of this additional information is not meant to be considered a substitute for the corresponding financial measures prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Investors are encouraged to review the reconciliations of GAAP to non-GAAP financial measures, which are included in the quarter's earnings release. I'd like to repeat the information about the presentation. If you have not downloaded it yet, you may do so through a link on the investor section of RADCOM's website at www.radcom.com/investorrelations. If you have any trouble, send Mark an email at markr@radcom.com, and he will send it to you directly. Now, I would like to hand the call over to Yaron. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, operator, and thank you all for joining us today. I hope you have our presentation in front of you, and I will begin with slide three. As you can see, our results for the quarter were very strong, with sales up over 62% year-over-year to $7.7 million. In addition, we achieved a non-GAAP net profit of $1 million or $0.09 per share. Our focus during the third quarter was to continue executing on existing contracts, expanding with current customers, running trials with new customers, and ramping up our engineering resources in anticipation of potential new projects. We will continue making significant investments in the business to support our growth strategy. We believe this is the right approach to meet market demand for our solution, despite the near-term impact on profitability over the next several quarters. As we discussed last quarter, AT&T publicly disclosed that they are using our innovative MAVERICK product suite as the service assurance component of their new NFV network. We continue to move forward in the implementation and are working closely with the customer to expand functionality and integration into AT&T's integrated cloud. As a reminder, AT&T plans to virtualize approximately 75% of their network by 2020, and given our rollout and expansion during the past few quarters, RADCOM is a key piece of this transformation. We also continue to focus on our existing business in the rest of the world. During the quarter, we were very pleased to receive two expansion deals. The first expansion deal was with an Asia-Pacific-based Tier 1 operator. This multi-million-dollar deal expanded on our original three-year framework contract that we announced in May 2015. We have been a longtime partner of this operator, who was the first customer to upgrade to MAVERICK, and this latest order highlights the benefits of our solution in assuring the network and providing real-time customer experience insights. Our second expansion deal was with the Latin America Tier 1 operator. This expansion to the customer's Maverick deployment boosts the solution capacity and functionality to assure the operator's mobile services while they are significantly increasing their network capacity. We continue to be engaged with leading top-tier carriers about their respective NFV strategies, and the public endorsement from AT&T has only accelerated our efforts. As mentioned on our previous call, we are engaged with 9 potential customers, with several of these accelerating their proof of concept timelines. Also, we are starting to see other operators who have reached the detailed planning stage of their migration to NFV and have either issued or are planning to issue a tender for pure NFV with network architectures similar to other leading operators who have already begun the transition. Our approach to NFV transformation is being received very well and creating the right excitement and traction with these customers. As I've said in the past, the sales cycle for these type of deals are longer as top-tier carriers are looking for comprehensive solutions for big transformation projects. As a result, they move carefully before making any commitment. That being said, and given the progress we are making, we continue to remain confident that these activities will materialize into new deals and are planning accordingly. As to the state of the NFV market, carriers continue to be very interested in our Maverick platform since they recognize that RADCOM is the only vendor in the market that can provide a path to NFV and future-proof their purchasing decision. As a result, we continue to feel strongly that our hybrid strategy of running a virtual NFV service assurance solution in a hybrid world of both physical and virtualized network elements is correct. We also continue to work to strengthen our positioning within the NFV ecosystem. We have publicly announced partnerships with Amdocs and HP in the past, and with the more recent AT&T announcement, we have been working on opportunities with additional partners. As to our organization, we continue to scale up our workforce with particular focus on our engineering resources. Last quarter, we welcomed additional leaders to our management team, and this quarter, we focused on expanding our engineering team to handle the unprecedented requests for field tests and our ability to scale and execute projects in parallel. Acquiring the right type of talent takes time, as we only started onboarding people late in the third quarter and started the fourth quarter. We're also ramping up our presence in North America. Eyal Harari, RADCOM's COO, is relocating to our offices in New Jersey, where he will focus on building out our local presence in North America, as we expect that new projects will materialize there. Looking forward, we are going to continue to invest in our engineering capabilities to maintain our product leadership in NFV and to support growth. So in summary, we are very pleased with our progress and continue to focus on execution. Looking forward, we remain excited by our prospects given RADCOM's strong position in the industry. And with that, I will stop and turn the call over to Ron Vered, our new CFO, to discuss the financial results. Ron, please.
Thank you, Aaron. Since you have the financial results beginning on slide 6, we'll just go over the highlights. To help you understand the results, I will be referring mainly to non-GAAP numbers, which exclude share-based compensation. Revenues for the quarter were $7.7 million, up 62% year-over-year. This is a new record for RADCOM, demonstrating that we have entered in a period of growth and increased visibility based on large, multi-year projects with defined milestones. Our gross margin for the quarter was 70% on a non-GAAP basis, in line with our expectations and consistent with the second quarter of 2016. Our gross margins continue to reflect the recognition of some older projects, which have a higher hardware component. In general, we expect that the gross margin will continue to fluctuate depending upon the mix of each quarter's revenue. On a long-term basis, we expect the gross margin to be at higher levels as more carriers contract with us based on an NFV software license model. As you can see in slide 6, our gross R&D for the quarter on a non-GAAP basis was $1.8 million, up 40% from last quarter, from last year. In addition, we received $385,000 from the Israel Innovation Authority during the period, reducing net R&D for the quarter to $1.4 million. It should be noted that our R&D expense did not increase as much as planned because some of our hiring took place toward the end of the quarter and into Q4. That said, we are on track with our R&D hiring and continue to increase our capabilities to support our customers and to widen the gap between us and our competitors. Sales and marketing expenses for the quarter totaled $2.3 million on a non-GAAP basis, up 9% compared to the third quarter of 2015, primarily due to commissions paid to our partners. Overall, we expect this line item to continue to increase gradually over time as we build up the sales and marketing organization. G&A expenses for the quarter on a non-GAAP basis totaled $690,000 compared to $477,000 in the third quarter of 2015. We expect G&A expenses to increase slightly going forward as most of the large increases are behind us. Operating profit on a non-GAAP basis for the quarter was $994,000 compared with $956,000 for the third quarter of 2015. We also posted $39,000 in financial income for the quarter. Net income for the quarter on a non-GAAP basis was $1 million or 9 cents per diluted share. The results included $385,000 or 3 cents per diluted share benefit related to grants from the Israel Innovation Authority. During Q3 of 2015, grants from the Israel Innovation Authority were approximately $867,000 or 9 cents per diluted share. On a GAAP basis, we were approximately break-even compared to net income of $561,000 or 6 cents per diluted share during the third quarter of 2015. The year-over-year decline was primarily due to increase in stock-based compensation. Turning to balance sheet, as you can see in slide 11, our cash and cash equivalent as of the end of the quarter were $43.2 million, more than five times their level at September 30, 2015. We believe that our strong cash balance places the company on a solid footing for addressing the big Tier 1 opportunities. Now turning to guidance. We are reiterating our full revenue guidance range of $28 to $29.5 million. In terms of profitability, while we are not providing specific EPS guidance, we do expect profitability for the fourth quarter to be below the third quarter, due to expenses associated with market trials, the revenue mix, and continued investment in the business. As Yaron mentioned in his remarks, we believe that our decision to make significant investments, primarily in engineering resources to support our growth strategy, is the right thing to do given the demand for our solution. As a reminder, we view and continue to manage our business on an annual basis because our quarter results can fluctuate due to the timing of implementation milestone. With that, let me turn it back to you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron. In summary, the third quarter was one of the strongest in the company's history. With the NFV tailwinds at our back, we are fully engaged to materialize significant growth, to continue and innovate, be a first mover and help carriers unlock the full potential of NFV as we support them in assuring a successful accelerated transformation. With that, we would be happy to take your questions. Operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1. If you wish to cancel a request, please press star 2. If you are using speaker equipment, kindly lift the hands before pressing the numbers. Your questions will be pulled in order they are received. Please stand by while we pull for your questions. The first question is by Alex Henderson of Needham & Company. Please go ahead.
So I guess I've got a couple of questions for you. First one, it's pretty clear that there's a pretty good relationship between you guys and the guys over at Gigamon. It looks like Gigamon announced a major AT&T contract that also pulls them into support between the AT&T and AWS platforms. Is that a project that you would also be pulled into, or is that something that you might get involved with down the line? Can you help us understand whether that AT&T-AWS relationship is relevant to you?
I need to be careful not to disclose any customer-specific things. I would emphasize, I think, what I disclosed in the past when we disclosed the AT&T deal, that the focus for the NFV transformation of what we're doing in this year and into next year is the mobile network. And I think you can probably do the math of what that means regarding AWS and Gigamon. It sounds to me like in a different space. So.
Okay. Second question I had for you was you obviously need to accelerate your investment. You talked about significant increases, but you didn't give us a lot of granularity on it. Down sequentially off a 9-cent number is not a particularly granular guide. Can you give us a little bit more detail on the number of headcount at the end of the quarter, where you think it might be by the end of the year, and maybe a little bit more sense of how much you expect to drive that over into the first half of 17, so that we can get a better sense of the baseline. We took a proactive stance here to give you a lot more room on that by bringing our expenses up pretty sharply in a preview note here. Are we on track with that, or did we overdo it? Can you just help us out a little bit with granularity on that?
So I'll give you the broader picture, and Ron, I think, can talk specifically add here. But first of all, from a business perspective, we're seeing, the demand for the trials and the continued investment that we need to do in R&D and the setup that we need to do for 2017 and 2018 in front of us. So we're going to continue to scale the R&D and the engineering resources, et cetera. That being said, it's now November, the quarter is almost over, so you're not from a numbers perspective, so Ron will touch on it. I don't think you're going to see crazy things happen, but we continue to ramp up, and we can't exactly disclose the exact number because it's small amount of numbers. They were talking 5, 10, people each time that we're ramping up every quarter in the engineering side, and it depends if we sign them up in November, we sign them up in December, it affects the quarter. So it's hard for us to give the exact number that it will affect us because of the small numbers. And when we look into next year, we're doing now exactly the planning for next year. We're going to have the board sessions to approve it at the end of the year. So we're going to be able to nail down the plans only toward the end of the year. So at a high level, we're going to want to manage next year in a way that we invest a lot back into the business. And I think the responsible thing for us is to make sure that we can capture as many of the trials and potential out there and turn them into new business and create the infrastructure in advance for that. So in general, again, without going into a specific number yet, from my perspective, I think you're on track.
Just to add on that, Alex, so we actually had a quite large ramp up at the end of Q3, and also we continued the ramp up in the beginning of Q4. We're currently on plans on the ramp up, and as Yaron said, it's the variation will be 5 or 10. We won't have specific figure, but that's about that.
Well, can you give us the headcount in the June quarter and headcount in the third quarter? What was it? What was the change in the headcount for the already reported quarter?
It was roughly. Alex, we're going to file the number of the resources in our full year report. It's going to be in the next quarter.
So no headcount, I guess. Okay. Going out, just looking out to next year, is it reasonable to think that, sort of a target of 6 to 7 million kind of numbers quarterly is the right ballpark on the OpEx?
OpEx.
If I had
How
put in
much?
R&D, G&A, and sales and marketing all together in a bucket, and you did 4.4 million non-GAAP in the September quarter, is it reasonable to think that 6 to 7 is kind of the band for next year?
I think it's a little bit premature to have these figures. As Yaron said, we are now in the process, in the finalization of the process to finalize our plans to next year. That is going to be approved by our board at the end of the year. So we will provide more color on it in the next quarterly call.
Okay, I'll see you at the floor. Thanks.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
I'm sorry?
Thank you.
The next question is from Dimitri Nadis of William Blair. Please go ahead. One moment, sorry. We are having a technical issue. One moment, please. I'm sorry. The next question is from Martin Cohen. Please go ahead. Martin, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Well, good afternoon in Israel. I noticed something very interesting in your income statement, and that is that you're actually putting all the profit, the gross margins, back into R&D. Is that because you feel that there's a good reason for continuing the R&D in the present appliances, so to speak? Or do you feel this is new R&D, something that you're moving into that you haven't told us as yet?
Hi, thanks for the question. It's Yaron. Basically, what we're doing is everything is, I would say 99% of everything is new R&D. New R&D and engineering resources that we're getting the company ready to do two things, deliver on our existing commitments, and we're starting to forecast the coming, 18 months of demand for the product and getting our engineering resources ready for that. So we're creating the infrastructure for that.
Great. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Dimitri Nadis of William Blair. Please go ahead. I'm sorry. One moment. The next question from Noah Steinberg of G2 Investment Partners. Please go ahead. Online with you now is Dimitri Natis of William Blair. Please go ahead.
Gentlemen, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Third time's a charm.
We'll give you an assurance solution somewhere.
Exactly, right? Mobile assurance.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of questions. I joined a little bit late, so I apologize if those were tackled already. But a couple of the clarifications, and then maybe a bigger picture question. On the clarifications, what were the DSOs in the quarter?
53 days. 52 days, sorry.
52, okay. And that's up from, call it 18, 19 last quarter.
It was 13 last quarter.
The 13.
Which we said was a...
It was very unusual.
Unusual positive, right? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I take it your visibility hasn't really changed. It's still pretty solid through the end of the year, right? You're reiterating guidance and you feel pretty good about where we are in Q4.
Yes.
As far as the new deals then go, what have you said in terms of the total count of trials, and how close are you in landing maybe yet another deal? We're looking now into 17 timeframe, early 17, middle of 17. If you could sort of give a timeline of when you expect another deal to come through, that would be really helpful. I don't know if you have that visibility just yet, but just comment on that, please. And I apologize if you already did. Just wanted to hear that one more time.
No worries, Dimitri. So as I mentioned also last quarter, and I touched on it also in the script, we're engaged with 9 operators. Now, these 9 operators are not just randomly 9 operators. They're the ones that are more aggressive on NAV or on this hybrid approach and have the most to benefit from NAV. And, you know, they're all tier one operators. Now, over the course of the last, I would say, quarter and a half, almost 2 quarters, what's happening is part of those 9s are accelerating their trials with us. And that's the picture now that we're facing. Now, the way that I'm when you translate it now into an Excel sheet with probabilities and pipeline management and things like that, it spits out that it will bring deals in the second half of the year. Okay, that's when you do the math, it takes, you know, a typical trial would be 9 months. They need to go deep, some probabilities on the win, etc. When I look at the business, it makes sense to me, and I would say that we're aiming for the new deals to come in the second half of the year. Saying all of that, from what I see on the ground, there might be positive surprises. So, the models are modeling to the second half of the year, and you know we'll see if one or two of the carriers will move faster than that. We might see a positive surprise.
Okay, understood. So second half is what you're sort of counting, and if it comes in earlier, you will be very happy with that.
Exactly.
What are you expecting out of AT&T for next year? Are we still sort of targeting the $18 million out of AT&T next year?
It's hard to pinpoint an exact number. It's not going to be half or not going to be double, okay, but it can gravitate also to be a little bit higher than that. It depends, you know, on many moving parts, but that's pretty much the area of where it'll gravitate around, so.
Okay, and has anything changed as far as maybe new deals, new step up in services, step up in new applications at AT&T? Has anything change this quarter versus last, more incrementally positive, negative, about feeling the same? How do you kind of take your take on the AT&T current ongoing business?
So, first of all, I think the most important thing is that the implementation is going okay. So, at the end of the day, it's a multi-year agreement, and you know, it's their transformation, and it's not a simple implementation, and it's a very complicated one, and it's going okay. I think the second thing, it's a live implementation, so the relationship is good, and the scope changes, and they need sometimes to contract more projects, and we see that as part of the healthy relationship, so it's going up, not going down. And you know, I would expect the relationship to continue to be managed okay into next year. There are a lot of activity coming, you know, on both AT&T's and our table for next year.
Okay, but incrementally, there's no new revenue, no new application sort of being added here, as you saw, for example, last quarter.
No new applications this year, but there are this quarter we are, you know, there are, again, it's live, so there are some expansions that we're doing them with them on the existing applications and the scope, and how they're using the product, that what areas of the business they're using the product. Sometimes they need something faster, that type of stuff. But I'm not able to disclose any like specifics beyond that.
Understood. Okay, that's helpful. And then on kind of the legacy, if I call it, I may not necessarily be a legacy, but let's call it tier two, tier three business, you know, with some of the carriers you'd have a relationship in the past.
I call it emerging market.
I'm sorry, you
asked? I'm calling it emerging markets, the emerging markets.
Emerging markets, fair enough. What's the run rate of that business? Can you sort of, you know, the Cellcoms and the Globe in Philippines? So, I mean, what if you combine them in one bucket, what would be roughly the run rate and your expectations of, you know, kind of the revenue contribution from that group?
No, you can do the math, right? If we're guiding to 28 to 29.5, and, you know, we said that somewhere around 18 is the number from AT&T, and then everything the rest is from that. I would say that probably, you know, maybe together it accounts for 90%, if you want to be accurate, okay, 92%
Okay. Okay. Well, is that the same expectations for next year? Are you expecting any sort of ramp up in that bucket next year, or is that pretty much steady as we've seen this year?
We're working on some projects that can actually be a ramp up. So again, it's a little bit early to put the full forecast, but you know, it's not. I don't see it going down. And there are some potential there that it's a region where data is exploding and they need some additional solutions. You know, most of the focus of the company is on the NFV. So we're not, you know, putting more sales, we're not putting more sales efforts into those regions, but on the existing accounts and adjacent to those existing accounts, we see positive activity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then maybe just the big picture here. If you look at, you know, the deal that you had with AT&T and the pricing there, you had this enterprise license, every function, every subscriber sort of covered under this enterprise license agreement. As you move into sort of this new world where you obviously have a first mover advantage, you're working through many other trials and with many other operators at the moment, what should we expect? Should we expect you to have some leverage in pricing going into those new deals, new operators, which would be essentially a little better than what you had with AT&T? Or how are you thinking about that? I mean, provided maybe they're the same size, well, they can be the same size, unless it's Verizon or something along the lines of, you know, with the same number of subscribers that AT&T has. But it most likely will be slightly lower than that big deal that you landed. So would the pricing more than compensate for that? I'm just trying to get a sense of how to think about that.
Business-wise, it's a little bit too early to say. Modeling-wise, the way I model it in my head is that I don't... I'm not at this stage, I'm not like building a premium for the next customer. So I would just say, okay, if it's a carrier, you know, half the size of AT&T, then I'm not sure it'll be half the implementation, but it'll be lower. So you can, you know, you can somehow model it that way, but it's a little bit too early to say exactly how it'll unveil itself business-wise. You know, business-wise, at the end of the day, NFV is a disruptive approach to equipment, and everything that we're doing is pure 100% software. So the way that we'll build a business, we did it with AT&T, and we'll build a business with the additional customers, we'll be around to help them disrupt the equipment base. Now, exactly how much goes to their benefit and how much we can monetize, that's at the end of the day the scale of that. So, and there's a scale there, and you know, they can get benefits and we can get benefit, but it's very hard to predict exactly how to unveil itself.
Understood. I was just trying to get to the sort of, should we model it based on number of subscribers in the network, per function, be it mobile core or virtual CPE or anything along those lines, or should we just kind of assume what we've seen here with AT&T, which is the enterprise-wide license agreement? That's sort of the gist of the question.
I would say that a carrier with I would model it based on have some subscriber indicator on it. Even if it's translated to an enterprise license, the enterprise license will be much bigger for a bigger network. And the subscriber indication plus, you know, some sort of indication whether, you know, it's North America or Europe, there might be some price differences there, should be enough to model.
Okay, understood. My last question, and I'll cede the floor. Just, again, a big picture on the NFV market and sort of the TAM of that market. I don't know if you guys had thought of, I know it's very difficult to model sort of what the actual size of that market may look like, you know, 5 years out. There's some industry kind of data out there that may support some calculation around virtual probes, et cetera. But as you look at your business, guys, you know, the virtual probe, you know, your entry into the load balancer space, maybe security down the road, I mean, that you talk to, what do you think your TAM is or will be, let's say, in the next 5 years, vis-a-vis kind of the total NFV market? And I've seen numbers anywhere in 20s and $30 billion, but, you know, as you look at the sliver of the business that you're delivering to the carrier, what do you think that the size of that market is, addressable market is?
You're catching me off guard. You know, 5-year TAM and earnings call. So we talked about TAM in the past. I would say that just for the pure assurance in NFV, there's probably north of $100 million out there in the next 5 years, okay? Because we're talking about assurance is a $1 billion market. And, you know, you can even probably make a claim that it's for the next 3 years. And that's, you know, analysts have picked up on that, industry analysts have picked up on that on that number. Now, if you start to add additional products and expand to that, it'll be more. So it'll be in the hundreds of millions. You know, some of these areas are as big as assurance. Some might be even bigger. So it's not a negligible TAM. I would also caution, you know, all of us that the NFV is very hard to predict. So everybody's trying to model, you know, some sort of a hockey stick at a pace of disruption, and what pace will it happen. So I would expect as more carriers move to NFV in the next 2 years, I would expect all these models to change and this industry to be in focus.
All right, good enough. Thank you so much. Keep up the good work, gentlemen.
Thanks, Dimitri.
Thanks.
The next question is from Noah Steinberg of G2 Investment Partners. Please go ahead.
Morning. It's Josh Goldberg for NOAA. How you doing?
Hi. I'm Josh. Doing good.
Just a couple quick questions. I guess first, you know, obviously, you know, you've been here now 9 months, and the results so far have been very strong. You know, best revenue quarter in the company's history. Obviously, you know, good, healthy financing to support the growth, and specifically your comment that you have an expanding relationship with AT&T and ongoing momentum with Tier 1 carriers globally. I think what would just help people is understand, number one, when you look at all nine carriers combined, roughly how much bigger are they than AT&T? My guess is, you know, if even all of them are half, it would be four to five times the size of what AT&T is providing for you. And my second question is, based on your expectation, obviously you're spending now, so you're seeing what's going on in the field. Can you give us a sense of the amount of your spending and how much it should correlate with possible Tier 1 wins in the next sort of 12 to 18 months?
Okay, so let me start from the second. I would say that the company is gearing itself to execute several projects in parallel. Now, are we going to execute three projects in parallel, or five projects in parallel, or six projects? It's hard to predict at that stage. And the infrastructure investment is not so much different whether you're executing, you know, the lower number or the higher number, because a lot of it is going to R&D and automation and how to scale the business, etc. But that's you know, the mindset is to scale the company to execute multi-tier one projects in parallel with the R&D associated with it and the engineering resources associated with it, understanding that it's in all in NAV in virtual, which is very advanced tech, and you need to keep the product alive in order to, you know, it's part of the implementation. So a lot of moving parts.
I guess I'm trying to get there before you answer that first question is, if you're accelerating your investments, that must mean that you're seeing better visibility from these opportunities. I just want to make sure that everyone here hears that, because I think people are worried about the expenses and this and that for the next you know, quarter or two. But as you look out now for the next year or two, it sounds like you feel better about your position and about the size and about the wins that you could win.
You know, that's basically why we're doing the investment, because what keeps me awake at night is not that, you know, some people can be awake at night, other companies, that, you know, if they're worried that there's a market or there's a demand for the product. What we're seeing is a lot of interest from the marketplace for the product. Some of it is translated into trials, and we need to get the infrastructure ready for that. So and I touched on it, I think, last quarter. I'm touching on it again now. A lot of the focus of the company is making sure that we have the infrastructure to execute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be seeing the demand. So you're absolutely right.
Okay. And in regards to just where you are now versus where you felt you were 9 months ago, how do you feel about the company?
So, you know, we've done a lot in 9 months. I feel good about what we've done. The relationship with AT&T is a good relationship. It's very non-trivial to get, you know, a lot of superlatives on an ongoing basis from AT&T, and I think that came out very well with their endorsement of us with that public PR. We've done a lot to scale the company. We've done a huge investment in the product. We've released many releases of the product in Agile to support NFV. The company is 100% software company. So many, you know, things to tick on as to put a check mark are as progressing, and I'm happy with the progress,
and I think everybody will see that the next coming quarters are going to be active quarters and continue to build everything out and making sure that the infrastructure is ready to progress with AT&T and with other clients, and that's the journey ahead of us, so it's a good feeling.
Last question for me. You know, obviously AT&T is a frame agreement, but how often do you receive orders from them? I mean, it seems like we haven't seen a press release of an order recently, but obviously your confidence with them for next year seems to be pretty high. So maybe just help us understand how that works in terms of frame orders versus versus what you see out there. Thanks. And by the way, the 8 o'clock time frame is a good start instead of 9. Thank you.
Thanks. It's a little tricky, okay, because it's a complicated agreement, but basically the way to look at it, it's not a framework agreement, okay? It's an agreement that is a holistic agreement. There's actually various agreements there. You know, there's a big agreement, there's maintenance agreements. We're not going to go and publish all of them, but by the way, there's more color on them for everyone that reads the 20F that we, I think, put last year, and we'll put another this year. So whatever we can disclose, we disclose there. And the orders are some of the orders associated with the big agreement are just invoicing mechanisms. So we're not going to disclose each time that they receive an order for an invoice and a payment. And that's the mechanism. And when we do have like big expansions, we'll disclose them.
The next questions are followed by Alex Henderson of Needham & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering if you could tell us, you announced that you had some new products, but you were keeping them under wraps to the street and to the broader industry by requiring people to sign NDAs in order to trial them. Can you give us an update on when you think you might, you know, give us some more information on what those products look like and, you know, when you plan on opening it up to the broader industry?
I can't because I think everybody understands that it's a competitive edge. I can just say that the customers that we did sign NDAs with and the you know, the 9 customers and the subsets that are progressing ahead, with some of them the new areas are included, and we're seeing excitement there. So we're keeping it under wraps, and we'll continue to do it in the near future, primarily to maintain this competitive advantage.
Okay. I just wanted to check to see if there was any update. Thanks.
The next question is from Mike Arnold. Please go ahead.
Hi, Yaron. I wanted to drill down a little bit into the 9 trials that we're currently engaged with. I think last year we got some updates throughout the year in terms of what the competitive situation looked like. Sounded like there was competitors that were dropping off as we went through new rounds of trials. Is that sort of the same thing that's happening with these 9, or is it basically are these 9 trials ours to lose, basically, given we've got this technology edge against the competition? Just want to get your perspective on that. Thanks.
A lot of them are ours to lose type of trials. We have a competitive advantage in the marketplace. No, it's being validated by AT&T and the fact that it's public. It gives comfort to these clients. And some of them are also in touch with AT&T. I maybe the word "ours to lose" is a little bit very salesy and sounds aggressive, but I would say that a lot of these customers that we're engaged with see the feedback that we're getting is that they see the cutting-edge technology from what we're showing, They see what why it's differentiated. They see the validation from AT&T, and primarily they're evaluating with us the technology. Okay? They're not doing like a multi-vendor evaluation.
Okay, so there's are there any other competitors that are trialing, or is it just basically you guys that are in there with the nine carriers, basically?
Again, I'm not going to go and break down the nine to each one, but with most of them, they're evaluating just our technology.
Okay, excellent. And then I'm curious with AT&T, I know that they've got DirecTV, and I've seen some reports that suggest that NFV could potentially be a nice use case for cable operators and maybe even satellite operators. Is there an opportunity to expand into DirecTV and some other opportunities within AT&T?
There's many opportunities in AT&T. I think, cable, enterprise, there's who knows what this next merger will bring us. Primarily what I see that if it goes through the Time Warner cable, just going to add more traffic to the mobile network. All of these things are positive, and AT&T are just focusing with us at this stage on the mobile network. So there's and our solutions support more than that. So there's a lot to do with AT&T going forward.
Okay, so it sounds like your addressable market includes cable operators, satellite operators, and mobile operators.
Yeah, some of our existing clients as well.
Okay. All right, thanks. That's all I had.
The next question is a follow-up by Noah Steinberg of G2 Investment Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, Josh Goldberg here again. Just two other questions based on some of the responses so far. So did you tell us, like, obviously moving your COO to the Americas sounds like there's some more opportunity there. Maybe you can give us a sense of the nine, how many are in North America, or a sense of, what you're seeing here that's getting you a little more excited. And I don't think you answered how many, if you took the entire subscribers of all nine, how much bigger is that than AT&T? Thank you.
I'm not sure I know how to calculate it like off the top of my head, but I'm trying to do the math, but I won't calculate it. They're
I just
bigger.
Want you to at least convey that it's certainly not equal to what AT&T will be. It's significantly bigger. That's all I need.
All of them are very formidable tier one operators. You know, whether they're in Europe or in North America, they're big, and I think everyone can probably do some napkin modeling to understand that. But of course, there. If you accumulate, sometimes you accumulate two carriers, they're bigger than AT&T. So, but AT&T is a very big carrier, saying that. What was the question now?
About the COO.
About Eyal. Part of scaling the business. Part of the strategy of scaling the business is focused, and I mentioned that in the past. It's NFV is going to happen in Western Europe and in North America. Probably sooner that it will happen in the emerging markets. Now, again, there's some in Asia Pacific. There are some carriers that are not emerging market carriers, right? There's Japanese carriers, there's Australian carriers, others like that. But if we look at the, if I put Asia Pacific aside for a second, we look at Europe and North America. Most of our R&D is in Israel. We have a branch of the company in India. We can support Europe with some local presence out of Israel. It's very close. It's 3-hour flights. It's not that far. When you look at North America, and I've done a lot of work in North America in the past, you need a strong presence in North America to support the business in North America. That's the primary reason why Eyal is relocating to the U.S., to the East Coast, to Jersey, and he will scale our presence here. And, of course, it comes, with both serving AT&T, which I think you touched on the call, everybody touched on the call. There's a lot of to do now. There's also a lot of potential going forward with them, and also additional potential customers.
If there are any additional questions, please press star 1. If you wish to cancel a request, please press star 2. Please stand by while we poll for more questions. There are no further questions at this time. Mr. Avkayu, would you like to make a concluding statement?
I just want to thank everybody. We have a very interesting journey ahead of us. We feel very good about it. And, you know, I look forward to seeing everybody next quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This concludes the RADCOM Limited third quarter 2016 results conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may go ahead and disconnect.